morning, everyone. Looks like word has it that we're going to make it through the end of this week.
Sure. All that rain out there.
Welcome to Dateline New Haven.
Oh.
That's right. I'm Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like Babs Rolls Ivy, the very vegan or usually vegan goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the belle of our ball, managing editor of the Inner City News, and a host of WNHH's daily Love Babs program.
Yes!
The publisher of La Voz Hispana, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, of many fun names, right?
Yes.
Like, give me one.
I don't know.
Okay, we'll work on it.
Yeah,
we got the bravest man in New Haven, WNHH station manager Harry Dross.
And
coming on the Q bus any minute now, we hear, will be star independent reporter Markeisha Ricks, who does have other titles, but will have to be present to hear them.
Oh, I would just call her the great ignorer. But she just ignores you when she's outside of here and you're waving at her. You're acting like you're landing planes.
Well, hey, Harry, what Mac do we have that gentleman on I'm about to introduce? Is he four or three? That's the one that's hard to pick up, right?
Is that right?
Oh, there you go. And that's, guess who you're hearing on mic three? You are hearing the weaver of wellness and wisdom. The mellifluous and meritocratic, miner of melody, the plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance.
Let me take a nap.
He's the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance, the erudite earl of ergonomics, the liberated lion of lucidity, the maniacal monarch of mercy, the blistering barbecue of brain-dead bozos, our executioner of existential enemies, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia, the sagacious sergeant sultan of swing, quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, the grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, our prize protector against pusillanimity, the distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, the king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state, recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise god waggery, capo of casual conversation, first name in flame, daring don of dope deliberation, sultan of spit, West Indian whisperer of wonk, the emperor of explosive exposition, esteemed elucidator of rebonics, top tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, the dap tone deliverer of decency, the maximal media maestro, bodacious bold-faced barista, bop chess master of chill, primo practitioner of prop prestidigitation, the beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of bop, right reverend of rapture, reigning raconteur of riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, the
never late for
summer, decorated, dazzling, indefatigable, dark and dry of the dinner dishes, Maximus Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Woo. Yeah. Okay,
we're just happy it ended. You're not happy.
Happy New Year.
Well, we might be done with the introductions, folks, but they're just getting started in City Hall with the concertant of the day.
Oh, man.
There was a little spat yesterday. It took place
involving
the top city official
and a
union
DC
official. The police were called, and now the question swirling around City Hall in the political circles is, will this mean a head is going to roll, or was this a blown out of proportion, one-sided version of what happened? Well, let me tell you what we know so far. So there was a union hearing yesterday, a disciplinary hearing involving a fellow who's also an official in the union. He works at the Public Works Department. He got involved with some mess with an intern who was stealing public records and got arrested. So there's all this kind of tense stuff happening on. And there tends to be the default tone of voice in conversations with the union and city officials tends to be the decibel of 11 on a scale of 10. There's often table pounding. Good morning, Markeisha Ricks. And Markeisha Ricks actually wrote about this last night. So here's what happened yesterday. The Fire Training Academy of Boulevard, there was this disciplinary hearing. I was telling you about this guy who was involved in this arrest with an intern for stealing documents and all this kind of stuff. And a union official named Harold Brooks got very upset with the chief administrator officer of the city. That's a top city official, Mike Carter, who's upset at him in turn. And voices were raised. And according to Mr. Brooks, this is what Mr. Carter did. He got so mad that he started causing a fuss and saying, let's take this outside. And Mr. Brooks interpreted that as, I'm going to hit you. So another union official called the police. And another city attorney took Mr. Carter out of the room.
Yeah.
And now at night at a budget hearing, Mr. Brooks told us publicly, and the union officials are calling for the mayor to fire Mike Carter, saying we have a no violence policy and that was violence. here's Mike Carter's version. Mike Carter's version is that this particular union official and the union officials in general with AFSCME always come in and yell at us, insult us, hit the table, speak violently, that yesterday they were even insulting and calling liars, the corp counsel who was in the room, the city lawyer. So he said he made a mistake. He should have just ended it there. He just said, we're not meeting today when this is going on. But instead, he got very upset, and he claims what he meant when he said, let's take it outside, was let's talk outside. Mm-hmm. And he said he shouldn't have done that. He said, I'm sorry. But he also said he feels the other side was the side at fault for how they conduct these conversations. But then he also said that as a city official, maybe he needs to be held to a standard where he doesn't act that way. So we have he said, he said. And we have, these are the kind of interactions that overshadow other things we talk about in the city often, because the question now becomes, the mayor just said last night, I'm going to look into this allegation. What do you think the mayor should or will do, and what's your read on this interaction?
I don't think anybody should be fired. I think that's always the default. Mm. I think, you know what, bring them in and find out what the deal is. Because I think Mike has her back on a lot of things, and I think she should have his back on this one, because I think, I don't know, Makisha, you could say it because you were there, but I just think this might be a big to-do.
Well, question is, did the person who said, let's take it outside, did they feel threatened? If they felt threatened, they felt unsafe, then something must be done, even if it's...
And that's what Harold Brooks said last night, that he felt threatened. He, in fact, said that he... So last night, there was a big show of department officials from every department. Now, I believe that
at a budget hearing.
At a budget hearing. But
unrelated, Hill House High School.
And I'm under the impression from a story that I wrote, which is that was the request of Alders to have... okay. To have department officials there, because the last time there was a public budget hearing where people from the public could come and speak, the union came to speak. They raised some issues that Alder said, well, we're the department heads to answer to these concerns if we want to ask questions about what was asked. So they showed up at this last department hearing, but unbeknownst to them that this had transpired a couple of hours earlier. And so, you know, And I guess the union not knowing that the Alders had requested that the department heads be there, they saw the show of force as an act of intimidation. And Harold said that he felt uncomfortable being in the same room with Mike Carter Chief Campbell was there last night, but he wanted police presence. He wanted actual officers there while he was there because he felt threatened.
And that's what it all boils down to. Does the individual who's being threatened, do they feel threatened? And I did see it was written that Mike Carter said that he apologized, but did he go out of his way to make sure that the person felt comfortable? And that's the key. I mean, if I do something to someone, and, you know, like you said, Babs, you know, we all do something sometimes, and, you know, it could get blown out of proportion. But you have a responsibility to go over and make sure that the person don't feel threatened, especially in a threatening fashion. You know,
there's also a second issue is that Mike Carter is the chief administrative officer. Mm-hmm. So even though city officials complain about this, they also are right that they have a certain standard. Mm-hmm. So if he has a no violence policy in the workplace, he has to be the first person to live up to that policy. That's the union's argument. And Shirley Poindexter said, if anybody else would get fired for this, he should be fired. Mm-hmm. Then the other question becomes, is that exactly what happened?
Right.
He's claiming the other side yells, is pounding the table, including this person who portrays himself as the victim, Harold Brooks. Mm-hmm. Although both sides agree, he did say, let's take it outside. So that's under question. Mike Carter's saying, I'm saying, let's go outside and talk about this. Right. Sherlyn Poindexter, the union official, is saying, anyone understands that to mean I'm going to hit you.
Right.
So I guess that's part of what needs to be teed out, because if the person did say he really did want to defuse it and go outside, then he wasn't threatening violence. You're saying if the guy understood his violence, then that's enough to matter. The other side would say, well, if that other person is accusing it, making the accusation, in fact, conducts himself in the exact same way, maybe that's a factor. But coming back, maybe there is a legitimate double standard that the person in charge does have to live to a higher standard, even if another person is acting.
I know, but you know what? I don't know about the fire. Like, it just seems
a
bit
more.
Yeah, I'm
not on the firing thing either. However, there is some accountability that must take place. Here's where I'm at with it, Paul. Like, I don't mean to cut, but I got to address what Paul said.
But definitely make sure Babs gets the win.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
No, go ahead. No, finish. I'm just saying I want to
hold on to
Babs.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, it's like, like you said, he is the head. He is the head. So, I mean, I'm from an era that when you say, let's stick it outside, the translation is it's gonna get something going down. We go, some fists are gonna be thrown. Bottom line, now if that's what Mr. Brooks interpreted as, you can't say, oh, you're not supposed to interpret it as such. You don't know where it's coming from. If you say, yo, we need to talk about this outside.
And even Carter himself is apologizing. And he did say the taxpayers deserve better.
Right. But
that's what he told the Independent last night than the way I behaved.
But did he try to do it at that moment, at that time? Because that's when it's very important. Because, like,
and I guess, Marquise, there was a comment that he did make an effort to say.
Okay, well, if he tried it at that time, but he's tried to, well, you know, like you said, people make mistakes. So if he tried to accommodate.
Well, there are mistakes and mistakes. Shirlene Poindexter's argument is that if you're in charge of the bureaucracy, and he's in charge of all the frontline departments, okay?
But he's still a human being.
Right, he's a human being. So there's, on the one hand, people definitely make mistakes, and there are two sides of the story.
Do they have beef with him?
Oh, definitely. There's a contract negotiation.
They got beef with Mike, right?
Yeah.
All right, so this is, so that's at the heart of this, because if they didn't have beef with him, then this would be a non.
And I mean, it's not like they're shrinking violets. The union is not a shrinking violet. Including Mr. Brooks. They are people who yell at people and bang on desks, which is fine. They're very urgent about their position.
That is not fine.
All I'm saying is that in the real world this happens. The question is, does Mike Carter, as the CAO, Chief Administrative Officer, have to live to a certain extent? Like, well, here's one person said to me privately yesterday who is a city official. Mike Carter. Someone said to me, you know, these guys always come in and yell at me and hit my desk and makes me really mad. And then we have to just take it and not knock the same way back. But that's the second thing he said to me is, that is the deal. That's the grown-up world. As a top city official in management, it's not right that the world works that way. But you can't be the top manager and act the same way back.
We have a president right now who cares.
Okay, but no. We can't do that. Hold on 1 second. If you're going to talk about leadership, let's look at, for example, Mayor Harp. I don't think anyone in this room think Mayor Harp would ever say to someone, let's take it outside.
No.
That's leadership.
I talked about that.
Okay, now, Babs, you were interrupted. I do want to hear what you had to say.
Morning?
You started talking about Donald Trump.
Can I just add, I want to throw in my opinion, if the mayor is true to kind of her, the tack that she's taken with the people she has fired, I think she's a person of second chances. I don't think he's going to be fired.
Babs
didn't get to make his point. We cut off Babs there.
I forgot. I don't think he ought to be fired. And I think, you know, it's funny to me that, you know, the mayor is the mayor is calm, cool, and collected by nature, right? She is a calm, cool, but she has everybody around her who's always flipping off and losing their mind.
No. Mike Carter is a calm, cool, and collected person.
I know Mike Carter.
He's a football referee.
But here's the thing.
And he feels that he was taking a lot of abuse and he wishes he hadn't.
I think he was. First of all, I think it's unfair to say that's part of the, you know, that's just comes with the territory. Because I'm not feeling that.
Because if
people come in your office and are adversarial with you first,
right,
or second, or whatever, that you don't have to take that as a public servant.
You don't have to take it, but his argument, and actually they will agree, I think all sides
and
will
agree.
And I think
they want to fire
still,
him,
right,
because
course.
It's self-serving to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're not going to own their self-serving part. I mean, the calling of the police and all of that foolishness, that's just showmanship. And it's showmanship. That's all they're trying
to. Is it really?
It is.
You don't think that Mr. Brooks is?
Mr. Brooks did not. I don't believe Mr. Brooks. He might have felt
something.
You know,
feelings are not right or wrong. They just are.
There's enough people in that room I don't think Mike was going to like. I think that was just words.
I think personally, you have to. Personally, I don't think, you know, I've never seen
now,
that.
Now, if I would have said it, that's a whole different
thing. Exactly. Well, you see, I think you have to judge body language.
Just the police department.
Joke. No, but I think you have to judge body language. Did he look like he felt threatened, or was it just for show? I mean, there's people there who are melodramatic all the time.
I was about to say, Harold claimed that he lunged at him.
Mm-hmm. No, but forget claimed.
There's only five people in the office, right? So there are only the five people there who know what actually happened.
Because that's the thing, that everybody gets so melodramatic, and it is true, because they want to fire somebody. Mm-hmm. They arrange the situation a certain way, and then everybody in the office agrees. But come on, sometimes people act stupidly.
You know, there is agreement on all sides that Carter did get very upset. So that's something everyone agrees with. And there's agreement on all sides that Carter's own lawyer in the room felt a need to take him out of the room to chill him down. Carter is claiming that Brooks himself was acting the exact same physical way and yelling way that Carter saying, which Brooks does not acknowledge. So we don't know the whole story. We do know that enough happened that Mike Carter, the Chief Administrative Officer, felt a need to apologize, felt he acted in a way he shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. He does feel fault goes on the other side too. But, you know, in terms of Babs's point, Babs, I think one place, maybe Babs, you and I don't totally agree here, but see if I'm right about this, is that I think we would agree that in a just world, if someone comes in and gives you a really hard time and acts inappropriately and you're in charge, that you shouldn't, that's not okay, and you shouldn't have to just take it. But I think that if you're in charge of the bureaucracy and you are in charge of enforcing all sorts of policies on conduct, that you do actually have to live up to a higher standard. I'm not saying you should be fired at all. I'm just saying that I don't think you should be fired. No. But I think that I think it was Joe who said there does need to be some measure of accountability if the guy, by his own admission,
right,
acted in a way he shouldn't have.
I mean, that's just a, you know what, then that's a mere harp disciplinary conversation.
Yeah,
because I think people can orchestrate situations to put people in positions to make them lose their jobs.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those times. And I think they got beef with Mike, and I think they will use whatever they need to use to make sure that he comes out of his bag so that he is reprimanded for his behaviors.
And there were all sorts of stuff, and I can't ready to go with all the details because I have to know more about it. But we actually have been following a story that apparently underlay this whole issue involving the recent arrest of a former city intern who stole payroll records. Mm-hmm. And that the union was somehow involved in when records were disappearing, and there's charges back and forth. And that was happening below the surface yesterday. They've been arguing this for a long time. So this stuff, as Babs points out, always has a backstory with a lot going on.
It does have a backstory.
But then it's easy to then focus just up, but let's focus on the behavior. At the end of that backstory, there still is a top city official who, by his own admission, conduct himself in a way he doesn't expect other people to conduct
themselves.
So he has
a disciplinary conversation. And the mayor comes out and says, you know what? I had a conversation with Mike Pence. I mean, Mike Pence.
Woo!
You see, I got that foolishness on my brain. She has a conversation with Mike Carter, mm-hmm. and it's a public sort of saying of, you know what? We had a conversation, blah 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 blah. You know, but at the
I
same,
I want to hear the one with Mike Pence.
I know, right? No, because he's not in meetings with women.
Wow. Norma Rodriguez Reyes, you were about to weigh in here. What's your take on this?
You know, when we talk about confrontation, I mean, this kind of things, policemen have fought with each other, mm-hmm. firemen have fought with each other, aldermen, okay, said, let's take it to the street.
Okay? Joe does remember one of those from his childhood.
Okay. So, the truth here is that if the union officials are acting the way Carter has described them, then that kind of behavior should not continue anymore. And I believe they
should it be
anger
tolerated?
Management. They need to learn how to control their emotions to the point that they don't go outside. I think a lot where we come from, okay? For instance, I grew up in the Hill, mm-hmm. okay? I had to fight, not wanting to, because they used to beat me up. So I had to learn how to fight. So when you grow up in an environment in which you're fighting just for protection, then as you become a professional person, you have learned how to control that kind of conduct. But every now and then, somebody has the possibility of bringing that out in you if they behave in a manner that when you were younger,
but you're still
happened.
Responsible if you're in a position of authority for how you react to that.
Yeah, but the other people are also authority.
I mean, I just think
they're,
you know,
also responsible.
I think it's unfair, and I think it's ridiculous to think that somebody's what is the weight of the last straw? What does the last straw weigh?
That's a good point.
What does it weigh?
Very little.
That's a good point.
So, because at some point, you know, we don't know what the backstory, but if you're dealing with people who are combative with you
right.
and feel like they can do that because they know
that they're gonna
that
trigger
you
something.
Can't. You know, that you can't just jump up and, like, knock them out.
Right.
The ante is going to be amped up every time.
I think I agree with you, Bass, but I still believe that the person in charge has to be aware of that and know that he can't slip up.
What's the weight of a last straw?
In a perfect world, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know...
We go to war for less.
Yeah, exactly. But although it sounds as if, you know, let's take it outside... does give a leeway, like he was setting up for violence and somebody can feel uncomfortable about it. Two things that was addressed in this room that I did not know about before this, and that is, one, he immediately reached out and tried to apologize to the person. That changes the whole equation in my book. What that tells me is someone made a mistake, they recognized they made a mistake, and they were ready to address it at the at a conscious level of maturity. So the bottom line is, yeah, we all can wish that we could all conduct ourselves in certain ways, but I can guarantee you, I will put money on it. You jump ugly in my face, my name is ugly for a reason. I'll jump ugly right back with you.
Well, our name is the Friday Pundits on WNHH Radio. And that's what you're listening to here on WNHH, your New Haven Song for Community Radio, broadcast at 103.5 FM and live streamed at newhavenandbend.org. It's Pundit Friday with Babs Earls Ivy, Normie Rodriguez Reyes. Sorry.
All right, Harry Dros, drinking, Paul.
Mr. Joe Ugly.
Yeah.
And the flyest and savviest news hunter gatherer this side of Fleet Street. The boss of the Budget and Beauty Beat, Star New Haven reporter, yeah. Markeisha Ricks. Is that okay,
now
Markeisha?
I will allow it.
No, you know, Markeisha, I'm taking it personal. You know, maybe it's because it was nice out yesterday and you were walking down Fronton Road and you were by Sheridan School and I honked the horn and waved like I'm landing
planes. Okay, you
planes.
Got tinted windows. I'm honking me. I could not see you.
I don't have tinted windows.
I couldn't see you, so I paid too much for
that. Let's take that in. Let's take this inside.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, if I can't see you, I'm not going to be all in your car like
and you know what?
Honking at me. People honk at me all the time.
Well, you know what?
That's true.
People are honking at the Escape. That's that teen center. They're building a teen drop-in center, which was a big project. It sounds like Little Thing Drop-In Center. It's actually this huge project. The city went to New York to look at one to see how it worked.
The money
to have
pit.
A big project to have a place where young people, teens and people in the young 20s have no place to crash, a homeless shelter for them a little bit, but around the clock place to come hang out, do homework, get homework help, play sports, do creative stuff, just be with adults who are watching over you. And the city planned to start this center in conjunction with Bethel Church on Goff, which is a great congregation. Not only they're really an amazing place.
They are.
Not only do they do this warming center all night on their own volunteer work, you know, keeping people fed all night. They're putting all this hour and making available their old community outreach center. They're going to rent to the city, but giving all this donated time and some space to run this center. It was supposed to open more than a year ago, which I thought was an incredibly ambitious timeline, how they were going to get this place all rebuilt, this old center, and open and programs in place in 4 months. I don't know why anyone thought that could happen. But then they said it was okay, then we're going to open it in March 2016. That didn't happen. We're a year after that second deadline, and they're nowhere close because a lot of stuff has gone wrong in the building. They've spent close to $400,000. Now they want to spend another couple hundred thousand more. And again, that doesn't sound like a lot of money to me.
No, really,
to redo an old big building, they had to redo all the HVAC systems
right,
and everything.
Exactly.
But they did make some mistakes, too. One person told me at one point they were going to work on the ceiling after there was carpet on the floor without even covering the carpets. Then you'd have to redo the carpets. And they were hoping the HVAC system was okay, but it wasn't. You were at the budget hearing, Markeisha, because that's what's interesting about budget hearings. We're having hearings on the city budget, but a lot of other stuff comes out in the wash at these hearings because you're asking how did you spend money over last year. Department heads have to come to these hearings, which are fascinating, and alders get to ask questions, and last night members of the public get to weigh in about how every part of government is working. And Markeisha, how did it hit you about this Escape issue?
It sounded like this was a thing that the city folks thought that they were going to be able to do kind of in-house, like, you know, instead of hiring like an outside contractor and someone who could project manage the whole thing. And It sounds like it got away from them in a way that they didn't anticipate, that this building had a lot more problems than they thought it had. And they had someone come look at the building and tell them that, you know, yeah, you can do these things. It's all right. But
who was this person who told?
I can't remember the name of the company
the
that's in the story
about
that Tom wrote.
Now, everyone's jumping on Jason Bartlett about this because he's a hot button member of the administration, a target for a lot of people. He doesn't cut corners. When they did this project, Mayor Harp said,
"You're saying that, right?"
No, that's how a lot of people accuse
no,
him.
Anyone
okay.
who's
you're saying people accuse him of that.
No, no, but wait, when Mayor Harp, I went to the original event for the Escape. You were there, Joe. And what Mayor Harp said was, "I like that about Jason."
No, no, no.
This was his idea.
He likes that he go.
But he says that we're not going to do things the way it was always done.
Not cut corners. Not cut corners. She likes that he's not conventional.
Right, exactly.
Right, so she said in this case with the Escape, and he said we can pull this together without a lot of money, by getting volunteer groups coming in. He got students at their after school program that's learning carpentry skills and stuff that came in to help work on it. So you do that kind of thing that costs less money, it's not going to be as smooth an operation as if you brought in Cherry Hill or Fusco construction company.
Yeah, but that would cost how much money?
In the end, maybe, as you're seeing here, it costs more than you think it would, or stuff might not be done quite right. So I'm wondering if part of what's happening here is we're trying to do it in this unconventional, with good motives, way that then doesn't, in 4 months, you don't have your brand new spanking drop-in center.
I think it's a challenge that not only do you not have the timeline, but the question is, what is the end cost? Is it going to be $1 million?
Right.
Because remember, this isn't a building that we're going to own at the end of the day. We're still going to be renting this building after we put all this investment in it. And that's what the Alders were concerned about. They're like, what's going to be the end number? And, you know, is this a good, you're quarterbacking after the fact, but like, is it a good idea at this point? Like,
right. Some people say we're building this whole new Q house. Do we need twice as much space? Yes. You know what I love about this? I love the church that they're going to run a teen homeless center. Joe, you have so much personal experience with teens who have no place to sleep. It's really sad about the homelessness. And that only gets a small dent in the problem, but it is a dent if they give them a place to stay.
And believe it, just to have that space, just to know that that space is there, to me, is a great start. Yes, if they could get beds at the Q house when they build it as well, that's a good thing for the city.
Because it's not like 10 or 20, 30 beds is going to solve the problem for 400 kids.
We have some. We have a serious teen homeless situation that's going on. And I'm trying to figure out all different ways that how can I combat this? Like this morning on my show, I was talking about, you know, second chance relationships with parents. I mean, you got to be a little more lenient to what moms say something, or moms and dads. You got to be more understanding opposed to just throwing your kids to the streets. This is a serious situation. Maybe it's not in our face because we don't see these kids sleeping on park benches. But if only you know how many kids in our city that are do not have a secured roof over their head at night, it would drive you nuts. I feel uncomfortable sometimes getting on my elevator when I think about it.
Yeah, but then you're so high up in the air in your apartment, you can watch over what's happening to everyone, so we know someone's protecting us.
Yeah.
But when you think of the city subsidizing...
Are you Batman?
Sure feel that way. But it really and truly do bother me. I mean, I really get, you know, it put a lump in my throat, like right now. You know, when I think of these kids, some nights I go down, I come back downstairs just to make sure that I don't, when it's real cold, just to make sure I don't see someone out here trying to find, because I found a kid.
And they're so invisible, too, because a lot of these kids, as I understand it, at least I remember Kermit Caroline was the principal of the house. He said he had lots of kids who actually, you wouldn't see them in homeless shelters. You know that they're trying to every night figure out which friend is going to let them crash on the couch, or for a while, some strung out relative might let them sleep for a few nights in a basement. But we don't think of them the same way as homeless, but they're really there. What were we saying? Norma?
No, you know, it's like when the city takes and subsidizes certain programs to a tune of $1 million. We're talking about $200,000.
You talking about the Schubert Theater?
Well, why don't we take that $200,000 surplus that we have from this voting
thing? That $200,000 is not a lot of money.
It isn't.
For the cause that we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, can you get close to the mic, Norma?
Oh.
So you're saying it's not. That's what I was wondering. You know, we look at numbers interchangeably. And yes, every dollar we have to watch, every dollar matters. I just wasn't hearing big numbers there. I mean, Marquise is right on point talking about when it's a lease instead of ownership, and that's a really good point. These hearings are good for that reason. But the amount of that construction job, when you talk about change orders, you know what?
I think what people are concerned about, yes, the number today is $200,000.
What's it going to be?
Is it $500,000 a few weeks from now? Like, what? You said it right, Money Pit. We remember
and they
that
didn't
movie.
Have any specifics,
they just kept
right, Marquise?
Pumping money, and they don't have specifics. Like, Giovanni has
guessing.
To... Like, so the city engineer is involved now.
All right, here's the specific number that
he's going to have to, you know, they're doing a complete reevaluation of this project at this point. And then they're going to come back maybe 6 to 8 weeks with
it
some design
plans. It is on
hold.
We're not getting closer to this escape.
Yeah, it's on hold.
We're
not even doing anything to it at this point.
Joe?
The real numbers are the homeless kids that we have out here. That's the real numbers. That's the show numbers. And I think what we need to look at is, look, it's so easy. Like you just mentioned, Norman. We put money into certain areas, and when it comes down to kids, via education, via teen drop-in centers like this, whatever it is, we're always ready to cut costs. And then we wonder why we have, since the 80s especially, I know it's been before, but let's look since the 80s, you have this at least two generations of people who are totally disconnected from what's going on in our society because we have this cut education. How are they going to advance? Cut support mechanism as teen drop-in center. How are they going to advance?
They're not going to cut. They're not going to cut this program, right?
Well,
but at the end of the day,
point.
We're still no closer to serving those very people you're talking about.
As far as I'm concerned,
and
right
in fact, we're
cut.
Probably behind it. I would agree with that because we're behind the curve because we've been caught by this ball of confusion.
Right. Look, You know, like I just started to say, but they found $200,000 in a surplus was the voting thing.
Registrar voters office.
Switch the money. Just move the money over.
Let the tennis tournament have some issues. And then they'll find some money for that.
Exactly.
Let Schubert whine about renovations. Let Gateway need something. Like, everybody needs something. Like, so, you know what? If you have to throw $1 million at this problem, throw it.
Because it is such a dire need. Well,
Marquise, you're weighing in here, Marquise.
I was just going to add those very entities that you mentioned, tennis,
yes.
Schubert.
Yes.
They all came and asked for money that night.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I'm not mad at them because arts we love the arts.
Part of what makes us great.
And arts makes us civilized, right?
And we hate to pit them against each other.
Although I wish they did more with black people in the arts
and
in this community.
And with Hispanics.
But that's my thing. You know, I wish that they would talk to the black community about things that, you know, and invite us to some of these things, whether they're black things or not. But that's just my own.
Truth be told, they're doing less. As years go by, instead of doing more with the minority community, they're doing less.
It sure looks that way, even if it's not.
One exception might be Long Wharf Theater. I'm not saying it's successful or not successful. Do you think, Babs, you're seeing more outreach there with each play? They went to Stetson last week to talk about a play. They give the tickets out to people to come to the shows. They have community forums. You've participated in one.
Well, yeah. I think that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's bare minimum. How many plays that are of color that come to that theater? Mm-hmm. Out of all the plays that they have.
I would say at least half.
Really?
Yeah.
I would say half.
No.
I would say that could be
my white math.
Yeah. It is your white math.
Two black people in a room out of 10. It's like a room is integrated if it has eight white people and two black.
Let me tell you what I get. Because they only call the black newspaper when they have a black show. And they want black people to come to it. Or they think it's of some relevance to black people. Right. And I have to always remind them over there at the Long Wharf and at the Schubert and all the other places that black people like all kinds of things. Like, we don't necessarily have to see black people in order to enjoy it.
Right.
I meant that white math thing. So I'm thinking like,
no, it is
I'm
true.
Thinking like when I'm a white person's in a room with, say, 20 people are in it.
No, you need a
and two people
that.
Are
that's
black,
real.
You believe it's integrated.
Yeah.
And you think it's
that's,
half.
That's the truth.
So I'm thinking back in these Long Wharf plays. I don't go that often, but I'm thinking they had that one about, you know, the teen murder and they went to the community. Then we had the one we went to. And then this week they just had the one that they had the forum. We have smart people at. But yeah, maybe the numbers are wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. And it's only like 3 out of 30. I don't know. It's a good question.
No Latinos, right?
Oh. Oh yeah!
Nothing,
except when was
nothing.
The last Latino play? Not even West Side Story.
Except, except on Pundit Friday and WNHH Radio. You're home for community radio because we're running down the week's news headlines, and it's Pundit Friday. Babs Rolls Ivy, Nora Rodriguez Reyes, Harry Dros, Joe Ugly, and of course the flyest and savviest news hunter gatherer this side of Fleet Street, boss of the budget beat and the beauty beat, star New Haven reporter Marquisha Rich.
That's not how it works.
Hold on. You were complaining about all
Just imagine.
This is why she was late, by the way. She didn't want to hear all my titles.
But listen, imagine how many things we could have funded with the $150 billion Obama sent to Iran.
God.
Just imagine.
Obama said keep my name out
your
mouth.
Wait a second. No. You're going to leave that, Harry Jones, with all the huge tax cuts now that Donald Trump wants to give to wealthy people.
He's taking
and all the
meals
money,
from seniors.
And the money he wants to send to the military beyond even the Republicans' own law about retaining that budget.
No,
you want to even raise that question about Obama?
That poor
wait a minute. What is he taking from seniors?
Meals on wheels.
Nobody had a meals on wheels problem when Obama was sending $150 billion to Iran.
They were still getting their meals.
Excuse me. You see, this is that sweet.
Wait a minute, Joe. Wait a minute.
Talk, man.
Don't get ugly with me. I took that as a threat.
That's
earlier.
Are y'all gonna step outside?
Well, you're telling Joe Ugly not to get ugly.
That's so true.
That's a new one.
It's like inherent, isn't it? It's part of.
It's like I just love how you guys. Just like,
well, if we're not gonna get ugly, what about hate? So you got this bus that's promising to come to New Haven, the We Hate Trans People bus, and it says conservative funders have funded it, and they go to every city and they park the bus, and they give this like very sophisticated science argument that there are only two exact genders, something that since at least the time of the Talmud has been debunked about, you know, this very strict gender, some people are born with different bodies, all that kind of stuff, right? Anyway, so they're going, hey, there are only two genders, and it's terrible, and they're trying to provoke civil rights advocates to act ugly. So they succeeded in New York, some advocates broke a window, hurt somebody, and did graffiti in a bus.
You know, we're such an arts community. We should just dress up and show up.
So they're coming to New Haven on Sunday, but they didn't make it because they had to fix the bus. But we had a demonstration of trans people.
A gigantic tarp.
Who were going to cover the bus with the tarp, which made me wonder, are you helping them with their cause when you do that? But then it got me thinking, I don't know my answer here. So I was thinking, what's the right way? If you got someone who wants to provoke something, you don't want to give them attention by then doing what they want you to do to act ugly, even though I think Joe has an exception to act ugly when he feels like it. Sorry. But but then I'm thinking, so what should you do? I think we would all agree it doesn't make sense to break windows or vandalism or shout people down and do the ugly stuff they did to Charles Murray and what they did at Berkeley and all that. But what do you do? Sometimes if you ignore someone saying something ugly who's getting traction, you're letting a lie go out. But other times, you're amplifying it when nobody would even pay attention if just some jerk saying something hateful. Sometimes you go there, you want to have conversation with the person to see if you can get common ground. Other times, that's not what the person's up to, so that's kind of stupid. Maybe you do want to show up just to give your point too, so it doesn't go unanswered. So my question, the hate bus is supposed to come back today. We'll see if it actually comes.
On a rainy day?
It keeps raining every time they want to come.
Yeah, there's a message in that.
That's God.
But folks, here's, while I think we would all agree that it doesn't make sense to act ugly and destroy property or be violent or shut them up, what is the right way? Is it to ignore it? Is it to show up, just give another view? Is it to engage them? What's the right
response? There's no blanket way. There's no blanket way. Exactly like you said, there are different times where you address certain things in different sets.
So how do you decide what
is which? Well, if you have something that has no legs at all, don't give it legs. But if you have something that's out there and it's really making an impact, you're supposed to jump up and say something on this. So how would you call this
one? Marquisha, how's this one, right?
I would throw the biggest, queerest party on the green, and we'd just be having the best time. Yeah. You know, that's what I would want
to
do.
You know, I got to give some shout-outs to the gay community when Mike Pence's house in D.C., when they had that parade in front of his house. did you see this?
Yeah.
Oh, they had a big parade in front of his house the night before he left for the inauguration. Oh, there was and keep in mind, in order to have that parade, the neighbors had to approve.
So, well, they don't. His neighbors don't dig him anyway. But exactly. I'm with Marquisha. I'd have the biggest. And you know what else I'd do? I'd get the liberal churches. You know, the real churches that
like Church of Redeemer.
You know, like Church of Redeemer, and have our choir come and sing and just make it a party.
What a great idea!
That's what I would do. And I would ignore them, and I would just.
You know,
and
I've been
wrestling
with this question all week. You guys solved it for me. I love it. I love it. All right, so folks, so solve this one too.
Uh-oh.
Governor Dan Malloy this week put out a preparedness plan. He forgot to send it to Harry Dros, but he did send it to some people. He said, look, we got 22,000 kids in this state. That's a lot. I didn't realize this many. Who are born here, so they're allowed to be here, but their parents are undocumented immigrants. So now that Harry's president is going to be cracking down and saying, let's just go crazy and find everyone everywhere and throw them back to their country. Sorry, that's a little bit biased. Now that there's a stepped up enforcement of immigration rules and now everyone's panicked in New Haven and Fairhaven and hiding in their houses and not even showing up places, they say you got to be ready that your parents might be taken away, and we don't want these kids ending up in State Department of Children and Families Care, DCF. Already there are 4,200 people in that care of DCF in this state. The kids in crisis. DCF has never been able to handle it. They never have enough money or they never consensus in how much you intervene, how much you don't, try to keep people together. It's really difficult handling what we got. If only 10% of those kids end up in DCF care, according to the governor, it's going to cost the state $60 million more for DCF, and it's going to be difficult to help them. He's saying you should have a plan where you have a guardian set up, someone you know who's going to take care of these kids legally if we're taken away, because it's going to be no notice. It's going to be you go out to the grocery store, you show up at your job, they find you outside a courthouse, you're gone, and there's going to be no one taking care of your kids. Any thoughts on that, Harry, about that preparedness plan? Was it a good idea?
Did we see this in the days of slavery? This is what happened, right? You come home, or you come from the fields, and your children would be sold from you, or your parents would be sold from you.
No.
And so then we had this thing called the Underground Railroad, right? That sort of help people shuttle to freedom.
I think we need to stop comparing this to slavery. It's even offensive.
If it quacks like slavery.
It's offensive to me.
No, it's offensive to us.
No, it is offensive.
It should be offensive.
Not comparing it is offensive.
No, but listen.
Just the fact that it's going down, it's offensive to us. I take deep offense to it.
I'm sure you do, but here's the thing. If that money has to be spent, it's a choice of being a sanctuary state.
Okay. You know? So therefore, who's going to end up
spending this
money?
All the federal government is doing is enforcing the law.
But Harry, why should But you don't think it's a good idea for Malloy to say, rather than have the state spend $60 million and not help these kids because it's not the best solution, don't you Republicans like when there are solutions that are outside government that cost less money and help people more?
Sure. If you could get outside funding, let's do it.
From where?
We're not talking money, Harry. He said, every parent who might get deported, I'd like you to set up a plan with some other adult you trust to be the guardian getting ready to take this kid for no money.
Or they could take their kid with them, right? That's also a choice.
Where they feel like they're going to go someplace where some drug gang is going to murder them.
And that's the situation for everybody, right? We attach that situation to every single immigrant.
Why not?
But
you don't know which one it's going
to
be. So why not?
So let's just attach it. Yes. You know what happens to American? Yes. You know what happens to American families when their parent goes to jail or something because they broke the law? The kid goes to DCF and everything too.
Well, they try to place him with their grandparents first, which is what basically Malloy is trying to say.
I'm
trying to figure out Harry's opposition. If their parent gets taken away and you live in this country, isn't it better if you have a trusted relative or adult take care of them? So how could it not be good what Malloy's doing, trying to save your tax dollars and help these kids be safer?
I agree. If they could have somebody pick up the slack, do it.
You know,
Malloy is late, though. The city of New Haven, in New Haven are already recommending that. They've been doing that for months.
I know that we have Junta. We also have Santa Rosa, St. Rosa Lima. We have people that are actually drawing power of attorneys so that they can leave their kids. Because they've been letting everybody know that you need to do this.
That's a good
Anyone
move.
That is illegal needs to take power
Not
of attorney.
Not an illegal. I'm sorry.
I mean, undocumented. Yeah. Anyone that's it's here undocumented.
It's a civil offense.
Yes.
Do you know why they don't call someone illegal, Harry? Do you know why? Because illegal means it should not exist.
Nobody's questioning the existence.
No, that's exactly what you're doing when you say somebody is illegal.
You know what's illegal? Breaking the law.
Harry, have you ever
When you break the law,
are you illegal, Harry
Droz,
who drove too fast?
Sure. They should deport me to Waterbury or Brooklyn, New York.
No.
See? Because I live here.
No, Harry. When you call someone an illegal,
it makes them feel it hurts their feelings.
It's not about hurting.
It's just a reality.
No. So
they're
they
breaking
should not exist?
The law. I'm not. Who said they shouldn't exist?
That's what
you're taking that connotation
is.
To that
no,
word.
That
Norma.
Is the, that is Norma. What they illegal
I'm so
is.
Happy that Droz wasn't around during slavery.
Oh, he'll be a slave catcher.
That's right.
Because slavery was legal.
Yeah.
Because
and
people.
Not being where your slave master said you were supposed to be was illegal.
That's right. So we were chattel. Oh, we weren't even people.
You ain't lying.
Well, speaking of hurt feelings.
For every three. Counted one.
Mm. How about, speaking of hurt feelings, the State Department of Transportation's Commissioner, James Redeker, had some pretty not nice things to say about the way New Haven operates, the way they develop their downtown, the way they run Union Station. Now, to be fair, he was responding to criticisms New Haven was making of the way the state runs the Union Station. Oh, okay.
They just called me racist, and that is so uncalled for.
I would be
a slave master.
No, we
say slave catcher.
Nobody says slave catcher.
A slave catcher, what's the difference?
A slave catcher is someone who's
a slave catcher
same,
turns them in,
on,
he doesn't
on
own
the
them.
Same side,
come on. Then I'll be on the same side. Come on.
Are you over here slave
you guys,
catcher?
These people aren't considered
undocumented catchers.
Less than
you?
A person.
Aren't you?
They just illegally came into the country.
No, they illegally came into the country, but they did not. But they're not illegal.
Illegal aliens.
No.
Aliens.
You're attaching.
That is
the law they broke to their situation.
Okay, they are foreiners.
It's
they're
a civil law.
Undocumented.
Find them and send them home.
They are undocumented because what we're doing is when we start calling people illegal, we are now justifying our reasons to try to pack them up like they don't exist and push them out of this country.
You're justifying.
I'll be honest with you.
You're justifying the fact that they.
I'm glad because I'm telling you, if I want, I'll be on an inner tube floating up on Florida, right? I'll be the king of the underground railroad.
Nobody's justifying anything but the fact that they came here illegally.
You over here in America, where all things are all great, nice and good. You, Harry, you had a whole life of all things. Listen, I don't care how bad you had it in America. As long as you don't, you can't compare to where someone else. You know, you think America is great? Do you think America?
I think
is
America
great?
Is great, what and I think it's getting greater.
So what
Let's
do you
make
think?
It greater.
What do you think makes America? What do you think make America so great?
What do America I think great makes again. America so yeah. great? Our freedom.
Our freedom.
Our
okay.
The fact that we actually are born in a place where we can exist freely and say whatever we want.
And guess what?
And even those people who are hateful driving that bus through New Haven are able to speak their piece.
And is that afforded to most people who are coming from these places where their freedom is taken away either by is trampling by drug lords or this type of stuff? Did they come to the United States for
them,
advancement?
I feel for them. Joe, and I would I would do the same thing if I was an illegal. I would try to get into America.
An illegal.
But the fact is, I would be illegal if I crossed the borders illegally.
You would no. You'd be undocumented.
Well, in either case, you would be on Pundit Friday and WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live stream, newhavenpenn.org. We just have 1 or 2 minutes left. I was bringing up the state transit commissioners. McKissick's been following the story. First, he's up at the Capitol where the city says, we hate the way you run Union Station. We want control of the station. Now you want to take it away and have someone else run it. We've been managing it for 35 years. The state owns it. We want to develop a new garage in a way that fits in with new urbanist development in our community. Let us have it. And the state's saying, no, what are you scared of in 3 years having a little competition for who can run it best? We think you take too much money out of it for your own shoring up your parking authority. We think you couldn't even clear the snow. We think you're so incompetent trying to develop Church Street South into the 9th Square. What makes you think you're going to be able to build up this? That he said that's cheap shots, not even true. We're moving ahead on those projects and that you have a really bad idea about what the center, that a garage can be so much more to tie into a community. The state says you have some crazy ideas about having a bus depot there. You just don't want poor people on the green. We think it works better on the green and not backing up every Union Station. A state committee this week sided with the city to move ahead a bill to transfer ownership. I think it's mostly a bargaining chip to try to extend the management contract. But the state commissioner was here. Markeisha saw him delivering a $10,000 measly check for promising New Haven to say, look, we love New Haven. But at the same time, he was still trashing the city and says, we don't want to turn this over. Where does it stand now, Markeisha? And who do you think has the better argument?
I don't know about the better argument. But I will say, like, where it stands is it's up to the legislature at this point. So if it gets to the floor for debate, it'll be up to the legislatures to decide who gets a hold
who
of
should
Union
who
Station.
Should own or run Union Station.
Who's running it right now?
The city.
The city manages the state.
And they've
owns
done so
it.
For no. 35 years.
Okay, the city of New Haven is running it right now. Well, just based on trying to get a working elevator in the parking lot.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Sounds like just, you side with the commissioner.
Just that alone. Just trying to get a working elevator in the parking lot from in the parking garage to get to the train station. If you can't get an elevator going, if you're gonna treat the parkers like they used to treat people in the projects, where you can't get a broken elevator every single day, that's the small things, you know, like broken windows.
Norma, who should run, who should own and run the train station?
I think it all depends on the numbers.
Which numbers?
Financially. How does the city?
The city saying that they can do it and make it profitable.
Benefit.
Why does the city want to
benefit? I'm in
favor.
Why does the city
want
to benefit? I'm in favor.
So the state wants to. They're basically saying you can. We want to bid the contract out. It's been 35 years. The city says we made it successful. You all wanted to shutter it 35 years ago. We made it what it is today. Now you want to take it from us now that it's successful.
And they're also worried.
And you don't want us to run it anymore.
They're
and
worried
you want it, they have to compete.
And they're worried that the state's going to take surplus money and use it for the Fairfield County train stations.
No.
They're worried they're not going to do it for its best. And they worry that when they build up the garage, they're not building up development that will bring in stores and offices and restaurants.
And they're not taking into context what's going to happen in Church Street South and elsewhere.
And the state says the city takes out too much money to buttress its own parking authority, which the state city doesn't agree with. And they say, in fact, your vision is wrong, that you should have a central bus depot downtown, and that you should be the important parcels to develop up in a new a mixed-use way or Church Street South in the Coliseum site.
I'll add that Redeker mentioned that there's a bus study going on. So there's something specific about buses, but he's firmly against putting a depot at the train station.
Well, then the city ought to, they ought to defend their interest in this.
I'm serious when I talk about the elevators. I hope to God.
And who knows elevators better than the man who lives on the 25th floor?
No, I am.
Mr. Joe serious. Ugly.
You guys think it's joking. But
I know.
And
what
keep
you
in
mean.
Mind, this is with someone who paid a monthly parking over there.
You have a monthly parking spot?
I had a monthly parking over there. We had my wife went into New York every day. So we had a monthly parking over there consistently.
And we have a weekly spot here doing Friday Pundits, WNHH, which we're now coming to a close. Thank you so much for joining us today on Pundit Friday. Thanks to the best pundits in the world, Bowser Alzaghi, Marquisha Ricks of many titles, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, Harry Jost, and Joe Ugly of many titles.
Thank
we're,
you.
We're going to take it out.
Yeah. I told him. Next time, he's got to give me a title.
It's coming up.
And until,
title time, baby.
Until next time.
Yeah.
Please remember, starting next Monday, you have Joe Ugly in the morning every day, 6 to 9 a.m. You have Love Babs, Love's Talk, 9 to 10. First the ugly, then the love.
I love that, by the way.
Until then, we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.
Yes.